Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I've got this really cool mic on my tie, which is really fun. I love that. And also, I just want to say before we begin, it is always an honor to speak after joys and sorrows. And I just want to honor the fact that there's so much joy and so much sorrow in the bowl and in the world. So I just want to bring that forward. The other thing I want to say, thank you for the music this morning. And I love the through line on all the hymns. If you looked at all the hymns this morning, they all have to deal with living life in the world and the difficulties and the challenges of that. And I think that resonates really well with this morning's message. And as we begin, I'd like to make a brief caveat for the sermon this morning. When I first conceived of a sermon about the book I Remember, I anticipated that message to just be flooded with light and love and fine memories and joy. And as we listened to William Blake's lyrics this morning, we read the lyrics, or he sang the lyrics, "Joy and woe are woven fine, clothing for the soul divine. Under every grief and pine runs a joy with silken twine." And as I began to read and think and remember and write, I realized that the subject of memory proper can also be one of the most harrowing aspects of being a human being on the planet, both personal and in family life. Those memories can be difficult. Many people suffer from traumatic memories, Alzheimer's disease, agonizing and unforgiving. Some people invest enormous amounts of energy trying to suppress memories, trying to keep a psychic distance from their memories. So any suggestion of recalling memories, of practicing methods to bring them forward, can be profoundly uncomfortable. So for those who find the subjects of memories problematic, you are totally, totally invited to turn off the Zoom. You're absolutely welcome to leave this morning. You can watch, it'll take about 20 minutes, then you can come back for coffee hour. And if you choose to stay, if you choose to hang out and hang in there, I hope you can catch a glimpse of that silken twine, of that joy thread that Blake talks about. And so as we begin, let's take this big, beautiful breath. We all can breathe. I remember. And that beautiful word combination serves as the title for this slender and powerful book by the artist Joe Brainard, artist and a writer, who was born in Tulsa, Oklahoma during World War II. He died of AIDS-related pneumonia in New York City back in the early 90s. I did not know Joe Brainard personally, though perhaps we passed each other on the sidewalks of New York City when I would be there on business. And if we had passed, he certainly would have been smoking a cigarette because he smoked at least three packs a day, three packs of Trues a day. Now, from all accounts, Joe was this friendly, positive man, easy to be around, very talented artist. He loved the aliveness of New York City. He associated with many of the poets and the artists of the time in the quote unquote New York school. And I discovered Brainard's work really quite by accident from a few different directions. I love when I think about those things, like how did I experience that and where did it finally come from? And so for Brainard, I first bumped into him when I was helping clean out this massive library of an estate, certainly my happy place. Among the umpteen thousands of books that we were helping to process, helping this family process, was this little volume called I Remember. And I remember leafing through it, it looked interesting, so I threw it in the box that was for me. I got home, I promptly shelved it, and just as promptly forgot about it entirely. And about a year or so later, I was doing the same thing for another friend or a similar thing for another friend. He was in the process of downsizing. And in his process of downsizing, he wanted to get rid of a lot of books. He knew I love books, so he invited me over. And it was fantastic because he just showed me the library and said, take what you will. I'm like, I'm going to put that in the joy pebble. So we filled my car with boxes and boxes and boxes of books. Joyful win-win situation. He got to watch his shelves have more room. I got to watch my car fill up with books. Now, I donated the vast majority of those to the library for their library sale. I kept a few dozen books that interested me. And one of the keepers was called The Collected Works of Joe Brainard. I shelved the book, where it stayed unread for 2, maybe 3 years, waiting patiently between books about totem poles and the Twilight Zone. And then as these things happened, one random Wednesday evening, I was just kind of looking at my bookshelf and I pulled down The Collected Works of Joe Brainard, opened the covers, began reading, and became absolutely smitten with the book. The first piece in that big, thick volume was Brainard's masterpiece called I Remember. And that title sounded vaguely familiar, you know? In his first few decades on the planet, Joe Brainard generated this incredibly deep well of memories, just like we all do, right? From mundane to exhilarating, from foggy to sharp, from unpleasant to even ugly. And as an artist, Brainard invented this exercise that proved to be like this golden bucket attached to this silken thread, a braided rope that he would drop down into the memory well. And then he would pull up treasures to the bright sunshine, to that bright light of consciousness. And his invention was so simple. It was so elegant and so potent that his writer friends could not believe that this technique wasn't thousands of years old. He would write, I remember, on a piece of paper, scrap paper, pencil, didn't matter. And then he would allow for what to come, I remember. And he mostly kept his writings short, a sentence or two, though sometimes he was inspired to write a short paragraph. One memory would call forth another memory, and then another, and then there'd be this bank shot and a ricochet, and suddenly all this vein of memories about something would start to burble up. Now his invention, has essentially become a standard practice and an effective exercise in creative writing classes, literally from grade school to graduate school. A poet I know teaches the technique to his graduate students so that they can quote unquote write from the subconscious and to return to an unchanging foundation that allows the freedom to spring off in any direction. Another friend of mine who teaches creative writing at Stanford notes that, quote, there's a catalyzing quality to I remember, a way in which by addressing oneself in this way, one cannot help but to remember something. Right? You're remembering something. And he continues, but what's really interesting is the way in which the end of the remembered sentence or paragraph is oftentimes completely unexpected, so that what we begin thinking we remember is not as interesting as what we forgotten we remember. And as noted in Psychology Today, quote, it's possible Brainard's method works so well because he anticipated some key tenets of contemporary memory research. Memory's subjective qualities, its layered and often unreliable relation to past experience, and its dependence upon retrieval cues, right? The catalysts that stir the memory and make it possible. Now, when writing and remembering, Brainard would not force the issue. He didn't sit down to try to remember a specific thing. He would not create a story. He would not create a narrative around the memory, but rather simply allow the memories, the discrete memories, to arise, the sensations to to arise, the relations to arise singularly or in clusters, much like our mind works. And he would allow those memories to create their own momentum. Now, often the memories are about childhood and family life, church life, school life, specific sensual memories, right? Sights and smells and sounds leading to an emotion and to an awkward moment of growing up, an awkward moment of maturing into the world. Now, many of the memories that appear in the book are pedestrian, they're ordinary, and my guess is that is by design, because we could all fill many notebooks with pedestrian and ordinary memories, because that is frankly the bulk of our life. And yet the magic, the art, is to allow the ordinary to become extraordinary. Now, every good poet, every good writer who masters metaphor knows this. And when we're nearing our last days on Earth, my guess is that we would rather eat a grilled cheese sandwich on the broken lawn chair with one of our best friends than ride a hot air balloon over the Grand Canyon, as spectacular as that might be. Point being that the ordinary can be extraordinary. And so along with the pedestrian and ordinary memories came the brilliant and the brave memories, the unflattering and the ugly memories, and even problematic memories. And that's where the bravery comes in this exercise. Joe would not ignore the memories that were co-created by the culture that he grew up in, though neither does he interrogate or cross-examine. It simply allows these ugly memories to arise, to reveal themselves, to rise and gather, to rise and overfill the bucket. Now, as an artist famous for his collages, we can assume that Brainerd arranged and ordered his memories to give a final shape to the book. In other words, he just didn't start at page one and rip through 3,000 memories to arrive at the end, but he gathered raw materials to create his art. Now, reading the book today, 50 years after its first publication, after the invention of the I Remember exercise, there are a few passages about race that are deeply, deeply cringeworthy. Passages that any modern editor would be called to strike out as unspeakable, as unacceptable. And they are. They are unspeakable and they are unacceptable, and yet there they are. Tangible memories written in black and white, recalled during the civil rights movement and then read 50 years later during the era of Black Lives Matter. Now, I can't help but wonder whether any editor ever said, "Do you really want to have this sentence in the book?" And as a reader, I wish they weren't there. Now, whether Joe was asked that question or not, my guess is that he included the lines because they were authentic memories of his childhood growing up in Oklahoma. And in thinking about this issue, I soberly, gravely realize that I have racist memories burbling up from my own childhood. Because when growing up in a racist culture, chances are almost certain that the participants of that culture will have memories that are tinged with the disease. So let's endeavor as individuals and as a religious community to make our future memories anti-racist memories. And now regarding sexuality, Joe was especially forthright in his early sexual experiences and his sexual fantasies, and in his words, his being queer. During his teenage years, he fumbled around with girls in Oklahoma and then in New York. His homosexuality and his sexual behavior aligned, and that was a beautiful thing for him. And that once I began reading, I remember, I actually had to ration myself to a couple of pages a day. And I really savored every page. I really started to marvel at every page. And like tens of thousands of readers before me, I was seduced into trying the exercise for myself. And kind of embarrassing, but here are the first three memories that arose when I, and no editing here, when I sat down with pencil and a piece of scrap paper and I wrote down, I remember choosing Colgate over Crest. I remember licking postage stamps. I remember feeling for loose change behind the cushions of Grandma's couch. Who knew? In 1969, Brainerd wrote a letter to the poet Anne Waldman, which included this passage, quote, "I'm way, way up these days over a piece I am still writing called I Remember. I feel very much like God writing the Bible. I mean, I feel like I'm not really writing it, but it is being written. I also feel that it's about everybody else as much as it's about me. And that pleases me. I mean, I feel like I am everybody. And it's a nice feeling. Won't last, but I'm enjoying it while I can." Now consider that line, right? I feel like I am everybody. What an incredibly empathetic statement. But again, it's a problematic statement relative to the modern sanctity of individual identity. Now, a critic can certainly attack Brainerd on this point, calling the audacity of a queer, city-dwelling, white, cis male artist suggesting that he knows anything about name your sexuality, name your geography, name your race, name your gender identity, name your occupation or avocation. And that said, when identity is stripped down to its essence, a human being alive somewhere within human society, Brainerd's comment, "I feel like I am everybody," profoundly empathetic rather than egotistic. Now, when this conscious human being feels Blake's joy and sorrow, and they feel love and disgust, I believe they're tapping into universal human emotions of which we are a part, which would be a familiar phrase to Unitarian Universalists, the phrase of which we are a part, along with being the concluding phrase in the list of our seven principles, is also an invitation and a call for everyone here to write down their own version of I Remember, because that anthology of memories, that corporate and broad anthology of memories, distinct personal memories, exists within everyone. And while the specifics might vary wildly from person to person, that essence remains. And so, to give you guys an example of Brainerd's work, I have randomly opened the book and I just wrote down 10 sentences, one right after another. So I'm grabbing his book off the shelf, opening it at random. I think I flipped it up and then had it opened at random. And so here are 10. And so just kind of get the sense of Joe Brainerd and his exercise. "I remember being shown to my seat with a flashlight. I remember dancing boxes of popcorn and hot dogs, singing, 'Let's all go out to the lobby and get ourselves a treat.' I remember a fashion newsreel about live bug jewelry on a chain that crawled all over you. I remember finding myself in situations I all of a sudden feel or remember that I've been in before, a repeat life flash. I remember those times of not knowing if you feel really happy or really sad, wet eyes and a heavy heart and a high heart. I remember in crowds, total isolation. I remember at parties, naked. I remember body realizations about how fragile we really are. I remember trying to figure things out, life, trying to get it all down to something basic and ending up with nothing except a fuzzy head. I remember having a long, serious discussion with Ted Berrigan once about if a homosexual painter could paint the female nude as well as a straight painter could. Now, that series of 10 I Remember passages totaled less than 100, is it less or fewer than 170 words? Some Unitarian is going to tell me here after the class. Fewer, right? Fewer. My apologies to the editor gods. It totaled fewer than 170 words, and so much was going on in there, right? Finding a seat at the movie theater inspired this weird memory of live bug jewelry, which then bounced into feeling isolated in a crowd, to the fragility of life, to deep wonderments about whether an artist's sexuality can impact the ability to create art. Now, over the years, I have read my fair share of biographies and memoirs and autobiographies. And for me, there is nothing that comes close to the simple truths and the cumulative power of the memories that Brainerd gathered together in I Remember. Now, the reader, or at least this reader, was absolutely seduced by that chant, "I remember, I remember, I remember, I remember," into making their own connections and insights, and the reader gets to feel their own life open up to that chant. And we get comforted, I got comforted, by Brainerd's mundane memories. Like, yeah, I've got a memory like that. And being simultaneously prepared for those deeper dives into memory, to falling down those mine shafts, to get ready for the sharper insights, to think and to feel and to wonder and to wander into those rarely accessed nooks and crannies of our memory mind. Now, as that chant continues, "I remember, I remember, I remember, I remember," as that litany grows longer and longer, you realize that much, if not most, of our life resides in memory. And one of my favorite questions to ask people to get conversation rolling is something like this: what are the 10 things that you treasure most in life? And not treasure measured necessarily at monetary value, but measured in emotional value and sentimental value. And of the 10,000 things that help construct your life, from dinner forks to duct tape, eyeglasses and waffle irons, what 10 do you cherish the most? And almost always, when I ask this question, one of the things that people respond with is the phrase pictures, or snapshots, or family portraits. And a little bit of note here, we have to fudge the rules about 10 objects, because we include snapshots, plural, as part of the one. And the reason people, to me, the reason people look to photographs is pretty obvious. That's because they're memory aids. These photos, they flare the brain, they flare the heart, and you can literally see and feel the past. And my guess is that you've all experienced the phenomenon that goes something like this. A friend shares with you an old snapshot that you have not seen for decades, taken so long ago you've completely forgotten about it. And you see your younger self, and you see that you're standing at your favorite swimming hole, your arm draped around a really deep friend, a friend who passed away a few years back. And you think, man, I remember Pat loved the barbecue ribs. Again, from Psychology Today, quote, "When you look at a family photo, you may remember a family dinner, an argument, or a poignant moment. Without the photo, you would not experience the memory, at least not in that moment." And so what? So what? So this. I have got some artist friends who have been married for over 50 years. The husband is a visual artist, the wife is a novelist, and the wife no longer recognizes the husband. Show her a snapshot, or children, or grandchildren. She has no recollection of who they are. Ask this published novelist to be inspired to finish a sentence that begins with two words, "I remember," and you will be gifted a blank page. Now, for those of us who are blessed with memories, who can access memories, who can make new memories, we would do well to tend them with awe and kindness. To tend your memories with awe and kindness. As a publisher, over the years, I have heard hundreds of people utter something close to these words. You know, one of these days, I'm going to write a book about my life. And my guess is that approximately nobody followed through for the simple reason that writing a book is difficult. Writing a book is intimidating. Writing a book is a long, long slog. But writing a single sentence, much, much easier. And once you write that first sentence, you can certainly write a second, because you've proved yourself that you can do it. And then you can write a third. And then you're off. I remember wanting to write a memoir. I remember being afraid that the memories were lost. I remember diving off the dock at camp and that cold water and hearing the bubbles rush past my ears. I remember coming up for breath, amazed. Amen. I don't know why I get so emotional reading that. I do. Thank you very much for your patience.